It was always important to me to get out and explore. And I took any opportunity I could to immerse myself in other cultures and study other languages, and just found that that was what really drove me. I'm really inspired by people that have taken that leap and gone and chased their dream to try something new. It's not easy. Set the excuses aside. There will always be a reason not to go. And if you feel called, you owe it to yourself to just go.
Welcome to Talking Billions. We talk about big ideas, big inspirations, big topics. We take on the hardest subject of all, money. How to make it, save it, keep it. But our conversations lead us to an even bigger question: what it means to live a rich life beyond money. My guests share their practices, principles, and evergreen wisdom. I'm your host, Bogumil Baranowski, author, TEDx speaker, investor, and a founding partner of Seekard Associates, a boutique investment firm founded in New York City. Join me on this quest to unearth the wisdom of the ages. My guest today is Chase Warrington, a good friend and a fellow world traveler with a shared passion for remote work, productivity, and living a rich life. He was on 35 planes by the time he was 35 months old, but his real adventure didn't start until later. Chase is an American expat currently living in Europe with his wife and their dog, a 50-pound Siberian Husky. He's the head of remote at Doist, a leading remote-first company with teammates spread across 35-plus countries. He has been named a LinkedIn Top Voice for Remote Work, a Global Top 50 Remote Enabler by Remote.com, and a Top 10 Digital Nomad by Dominica. He's also a regular contributor to several of the world's top remote work outlets. He's the host of a hugely popular podcast about abroad. After calling half a dozen countries home, Chase is passionate about the future of work and its impact on global mobility, as well as making location independence the new standard and helping others build a life without borders. We will talk about living a rich life as a location independent professional, Doist, a remote first company, a bootstrap startup with no exit strategy, with a global team providing tools for others to work and live better. Todoist, a to-do list on steroids, an app serving 30 million users in 19 languages. We'll take a fresh look at what it means to be productive beyond the cubicle, meetings, presence indicators, and red receipts, taking the leap and traveling the world while working remotely. Please help me welcome Chase Warrington. Hi, Chase. Thank you for joining me today.
It's wonderful to see you again. It's been too long, but I'm glad the podcasting world has brought us back together.
Yeah, I'm very excited to talk to you because last time it was you asking questions and me doing the talking. And I thought I'm looking forward to a time when we can have me asking questions and you sweating a little bit.
I'm ready to be grilled. Let's do it.
The first big question that I have for you, I come from the investment profession and I get a lot of questions about what it means to be rich. And it seems that a lot of people have a number in mind. For some people, thousands of dollars are enough to feel rich. For others, even millions won't do it. And as I think of you, Chase, I'm thinking of a rich lifestyle, and it's beyond the monetary metrics. Tell me more about your life. Tell me how you're living, where you're living, how you're working. You are an inspiration for a lot of people.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. It's funny. I had one of those moments in my career. I also studied finance and went into the financial world in the insurance business in particular, and really thought that was my path, but I was going against the grain. I knew I was, but I just thought there's not really a choice. So you take the great career opportunities and the stock options and the company cars and all those perks and the nice salary and bonuses and all those things. And so I was on that path and working towards that. And really thought that was the only path that I could take and the only path I wanted to take that was realistic. But at some point, I don't want to say opened my eyes because that might imply that others are closed. But for me, it was an eye-opening moment to realize that I wasn't really doing everything that I wanted to do. And that the cliche goes, life is short. And there was a part of me that really wanted to get off of that path, maybe onto the road less traveled and see more of the world. And at the time, though, there just wasn't really a great path for that. There wasn't really a lot of remote work opportunities. I tried to actually convert my job, the remote job in the US in the finance insurance industry, but I couldn't convert it to a location independent role. They wouldn't let me leave the US. I'll fast forward. The long story short is that I ultimately left that and really set off on my own trying to figure out how I was going to do this. I gave myself a year and learned how to downsize my life quite a bit. That number, we all do have that number, you're correct. I had those numbers in my head and they involved mortgages, retirement, and millions in the bank. And those things are gone. I wouldn't want to lead someone to believe that I've built this alternative life for myself where I am rich in travel and adventure and a great relationship and exploring and living in other parts of the world, which fulfills me in another way. But it did come with some sacrifices. The good news is the sacrifices weren't as bad as I thought they were going to have to be. And I've managed to build a great career for myself and one that I love and one that provides me with plenty of income to live comfortably, but I had to adjust. And so I guess that's the lesson that I've given myself is that it was worth the adjustment. It was worth those growing pains. And today I live location independently. I work for a startup where we have a couple stable products and we make decent money and we live very focused on balance and embracing things outside of work, but also putting a lot of effort into the work. It's worked out well, I think.
It's been an exciting journey, and we'll come back to some details in a minute, but I'm curious how it all started. And I want to ask you about your childhood and upbringing and your relationship with travel and curiosity to see the world. Tell me more.
Funny thing, my dad is a pilot. He is still a pilot. And my mom was a flight attendant. They actually met when they were in like middle school or something, but they both went on to work in aviation. And apparently I was on 35 planes by the time I was 35 months or something like that. So perhaps it was just like baked into me. But the truth is, we actually didn't do any traveling when I was young. I didn't leave the US until I was 18 years old, but I had a burning desire to do it. I couldn't wait to get out there. I saved up my whole senior year of high school and went on a trip, took a month and went down to Australia. And that was dipping my toe for the first time in being abroad and just completely fell in love with it and decided I need to bake this into the rest of my life somehow. So from there, it progressed into like study abroads and doing internships abroad. I traveled around Europe, did like the typical backpacker thing around Europe during college and took an internship in Beijing. Took any opportunity I could through those formative university years to immerse myself in other cultures and study other languages and just found that that was what really drove me. I added an international business minor to my curriculum and just said, I just need to be in this world somehow. There wasn't any one event that brought it out of me, but I even wrote about it. I did some journaling about places I have to see before I die when I was young and had a huge map in my room that took up the entire wall. It was always important to me to get out and explore. And I'm still really motivated by that. I joke sometimes on my podcast, I really wanted the most mundane moments to be exciting, going to the grocery store or going to the gym or something like that. I want to make those moments a little adventure in and of themselves. And I feel like that when I'm in a foreign place.
I like that. Are your parents surprised that you took off? You're living in a different country, working in a different country, moving around?
They've settled into it. We're very close. That's another thing is I meet a lot of expats who have moved abroad. And a lot of times they're running from something, perhaps a bad family situation or just something that back at home that caused them to want to leave. For me, it's the opposite. If anything, I'm pulled back home because of my close ties to my family and sort of a guilt that weighs on me for being so far. It's not like I've been forced out of my country or something like that. The most surprising thing for them was when I left the corporate ladder that was going in the right direction. My dad had some wonderful choice words for me when I told him that I was going to move to Chile and maybe teach English or something for a few years. And they've totally gotten used to it. They support it. And what I found also is that we get a ton. You talk about living a rich life. I think quality over quantity is a huge part of that. And I get amazing quality time with them. I'm getting ready to go back and spend 3 weeks in the US, and that will be pure quality time with my family. They came here for 2 weeks over the summer, and we spent time traveling around in Switzerland and Germany and sharing our life with them here. So those are really rich moments in a different way. So I think that quality is what I've come to appreciate a lot.
I think a lot of people can relate to that. I want to talk about your podcast. You launched it a while ago now. I was lucky enough to be among the early guests on your podcast. It's called About Abroad, and you sit down and talk to digital nomads, remote workers around the world. I'm curious what you learn in the process in terms of ideas and inspiration that you could share.
I'm inspired weekly. I started this as a passion project just because I'm a podcast junkie and I wanted to learn the art of podcasting and hosting and things like that. But when these happened to be conversations that I was having all the time anyways, especially with the explosion of remote work, it has become a business in and of itself and in its own thing, but it's really still in my heart, just like a passion project. I love talking to these people. I loved our conversation. We could have spoken for hours, I think, about the life that you've built for yourself and what you and your family are doing, traveling around. So I'm really inspired by people that have taken that leap and gone and chased their dream to try something new. It's not easy. It's a privilege often. I try to talk to people who are coming from both sides of it. So I talk to people who are refugees, people who have been forced out of their countries or maybe felt like they needed to go somewhere else because they had for better opportunity, maybe not forced, quote unquote, but felt forced if they really wanted to have a good life for themselves. And that's a totally different story than the person who, like myself, who was privileged with an American passport and just said, oh, I want to go live in Europe and travel around for a while. But both those people have really interesting stories and have jumped through some hoops to make it work. I like diving into the pros and cons, the trade-offs. We all struggle with some things and we all are enjoying many things about this lifestyle. So getting past the Instagram moments is my thing. I like having the conversations that move us past just the highlights and talking about some of the challenges and some of the funny things that happen along the way and more about the passion. What is the reason that you've jumped through all those hoops and made this work for yourself? And then sharing some of the practical knowledge that can allow others to do the same. That was a big thing for me. When I first wanted to move abroad, there was just no information out there on how to do it. Remote work wasn't really a thing. There weren't like even great blogs or great websites that shared visa information, anything like that. So just sharing people's stories, I find the best way to find out about something. Having those conversations just with a microphone in front of us is paying it forward, building in public, and also just a lot of inspiration for me.
I think that we grow up believing that there's only one way to live a life. And after each of your podcast episodes, I realize there are countless ways to organize your life. And not just in terms of location, but also how people work, how people live. And it's very inspiring to see. And just knowing that somebody else has done it gives you a little bit more confidence and courage that you can do it too.
Absolutely. Yeah. You might have heard me say this before, but for us, my wife and I were stuck in a bad place after we had already gone off adventuring and come back and were trying to reset the tables a little bit and figure out life and maybe settle down. And we were really feeling stuck with that. And we had been more digital nomading, but that wasn't really the stage of life we were in. We didn't want to be nomadic anymore. We were traveling around the world with a 50-pound Siberian Husky and a couple of online businesses and piecing it together. And this isn't really the comfortable life that we want. But we came across this after trying, failing to settle into a more standard life again, which is really challenging, by the way. Like when we had two pretty substantial incomes, we were living a very comfortable life and we left both of those behind. And then to try to return to that, you come back to a situation where your standards are still in place, but your income doesn't match that. And that can be really uncomfortable because you have to have this conversation with yourself. Do you want to go back down the old path you were on, or do you want to lower your standards? Neither sound very good. So we were in a place where that was happening. And my wife stumbled across this blog. I won't mention the name because it's not a great blog, very outdated, but this family that was living in Spain and shared their information about how they did it. And my wife said, hey, there's a visa that we could use to go live in Spain, I think. And then we dug into it and we found out it was true. And that's what we went and did. And it changed the trajectory of our life. So just this person deciding to write this blog one day really changed things for us. And so I think that's a little part of the motivation for me.
You and I talked about it. The pandemic years around the world gave a lot of people permission to try something else, working from home or working from anywhere. And I think it's a shared experience, even the fact that people feel so much more comfortable with technology, with video calls and working remotely. And I'm not sure if it's for everybody, but the fact that we, so many of us, had a taste of it, it's something that stays with us. And whether we use it or not, it's up to us.
You know it's there and the possibility exists if you'd like to tap into that.
Exactly. Tell me more about the company you work for. It's a unique startup. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's self-funded. It has no exit strategy. And we'll talk in a second about the product. But the company itself and your role at the company, let's talk about that.
It is an interesting subject when I step back and think about it and all the vantage points that you just mentioned. Because in my day-to-day, I don't think about it, but it is a little bit of a unicorn, not in the billion-dollar valuation way, but in a little bit of just being a rare bird. We have 100 people in 35 different countries. We've been completely remote first since our inception. The company's been around technically since 2007, and we've always just said we're going to just hire people remotely and not have an office, and we're going to hire the talent that we feel fits our culture and our needs best and set location aside. We're also hyper asynchronous, meaning we have very few meetings. We have very few interactions, which we expect immediate response. So everything is done very asynchronously, which is an interesting thing because we have people spread across the entire world in every single time zone. So we don't really have the choice but to go that way, but we don't feel that we're hindered by it. In fact, we feel like we're emboldened by this approach. It really forces a lot of deep work thinking and a lot of the antithesis of I need to be connected to my chat tool or my Zoom account in order to show that I'm being productive. It's the opposite of that. It's more like I need to produce really awesome work because otherwise people won't know that I was working. So we feel it's actually really a superpower for us. It's worked really well, and we've been doing it since long before the pandemic. My job at the company, my title is head of remote, and it's my role to make sure that our team as a remote team is operating at peak efficiency. So it's just looking at all the tools that we're using, the best practices, the way in which we interact with each other, and the way we connect with each other is a huge part of it. I'm very involved in building the culture and making sure we have space for human connection and building trust and things like that. That involves a lot of a wide range of activities, from making sure we're using the right tools internally to planning our company retreats where we actually bring people together from all over the world a couple weeks a year. So it's really fun. It's a dream job for someone like me who's very passionate about the remote work movement and making sure that this is humanized in some way. We're not just like robots sitting behind laptops, but we actually like have a wonderful, strong culture. And I'm glad to go deeper on any one of those subjects. But you're right, we don't have an exit strategy. We're completely bootstrapped. And we've managed to build a couple products that collectively serve around 30 million users in 19 different languages while we're working this way. So when people tell us remote work can't work at scale, I feel like we can showcase that it can.
You took a whole leap beyond what a lot of people thought was possible, beyond the idea that work has to be done at a desk to show up at a physical location. You are remote, but you don't even use the traditional green dot apps that show that you're active as a way to measure productivity, which I think is something that a lot of companies could learn from. You took a whole leap beyond that.
The presence indicator, the read receipt, hey, I'm here right now, is very toxic, actually. And it ultimately, even setting the mental health side, that aspect aside, if you don't subscribe to that, going back to what I said a minute ago, if you're building a work culture that forces people to be sitting there staring at their chat tools, responding immediately, needing to be able to hop into a meeting at the snap of a finger, that doesn't exist in an asynchronous organization because we just don't think it's productive. There's statistics out there that show that every time you distract someone, they might take 20 to 30 minutes to recollect their thoughts. So every time someone does that, they've got 26 minutes to figure out what it is that they were working on and get focused on that again. So if you remove all those distractions, you start thinking about pings or notifications as distractions and meetings as distractions and think about, why are we here? We're here to get work done, right? Let's just focus on the work and the deliverables and the outcomes. And then let's move all the junk, all the distractions to the side. It's amazing what happens when companies really buy into it. I've studied these organizations that do it at a really high level, and we mimic what they're doing, and the productivity is incredible. And we're a productivity company. That's what we do. We build productivity tools. We're in that space and drinking our own Kool-Aid, but it's worked fantastic for us.
I think a lot of companies and CEOs could learn from your company about productivity, because I think a lot of companies now are struggling how to measure productivity with so many remote workers, how to supervise them. how to know if they're doing the right work. Before, they were used to just walking around and looking over your shoulder, which I never thought was the best way to go about it. Right now, what you do could be an inspiration for other companies.
You know what's crazy is you look at the work. This mind-boggling concept of, did the work get done at the time that it said it would get done? Did we hit our goals? Did this person who was held accountable to this deliver this? And stop worrying about how long was the butt in the seat and how many keystrokes were there? Does the mouse move every 5 minutes? These things don't matter. Go find a study that says that any of those things connect to actual productivity. I think there's plenty of data to show that the average person in an office is going to work 2 to 4 hours. I think the average is around 2 hours and 45 minutes per day. They're going to go clock in for 8 hours and get credit for all 8 hours, but they're only going to probably produce around 3 hours of real work all day. So that's not wonderful productivity. If that's your baseline, that's the vantage point you're starting from, then there's a lot of room for improvement. And if you're not willing to test the waters in this newer direction, I look at it as an opportunity cost. What are you afraid of? Why not try this? Because there are companies that are doing it at a very high level, and not just the productivity. In our case, our retention rate hovers in the 90 percentile. We have people employed around the world that are not making Silicon Valley salaries, for sure. We're a bootstrapped company. We couldn't exist in that environment if we were just based in Silicon Valley, because we couldn't afford all the talent that you need to run a company like this. Our company thrives financially. Our people are thriving personally. They have great balance between work and when they're not working. Our culture is thriving because we create intentional ways for people to connect, and the productivity stays at a really high level. So I think it totally can work. I also think it's fair to say that remote done poorly is a horrible experience, and I wouldn't wish it on somebody. The key there is, if you're going to do it, you really have to go all in and decide that you're going to build everything, your practices, your tool set, the culture, you're going to have to build that around remote. And breaking things down and rebuilding them from that standpoint is really important.
No, it's remarkable what you guys are doing and what you're doing at the firm. I want to talk about time. We were talking about rich life, but really time is the most precious asset that we have. And technology today helps us save it and use it better. And Doist specifically has a tool that you and I talked about. It's Todoist. I'm a huge fan, a power user. Tell us more how people can use it. How did the idea come about? I think it's something that can change lives.
Thank you. It's a funny origin story. A little bit of background on Todoist. It is basically a task manager, a to-do list, but a to-do list on steroids. It can be as powerful as you want it to be or as basic as you want it to be. My wife and I use it for our grocery list, and I also use it to manage projects with 7,500 people across the world in multiple languages. So it can be very dynamic in that way. But our CEO and founder built it because he's a developer by trade, and he just could not find something on the market back in 2007 that did what he wanted it to do. So he just rolled up his sleeves and built it. He was actually working on a pretty successful social media product platform that was doing very well in Asia. He was based in Taiwan at the time. And he just said, I'm going to do this myself. And then he shared it with his network and people said, hey, I want that. And so then he started giving it away. And then people said, I'd pay for that. And then all of a sudden, before he knew it, he had a business and then he needed support team. And then he started hiring people remotely to support him. The rest is history. That I mentioned earlier, now we support 30 million customers in different languages, and we have some incredible stats. We've helped people complete billions of tasks and employ this team that's spread across the world. I've told people before, like, yeah, we make a to-do list. And they're like, no, really, what do you guys do? No, really, we have a to-do list. That's the thing. Like, that's a feature? No, that's the thing. That's it's the product. And it's one of two. We have another product called Twist, which is like a Slack or Microsoft Teams competitor, in a way, a much smaller competitor, but specifically focused on serving remote teams in an asynchronous way. So between those two tools, that's what our company's focused on. But Todoist is the long-standing bigger brother to Twist and the product that most people know.
It's a fantastic tool. And I used to have a white sheet of paper in front of me on my desk back in the day, and I would write down what I need to do. And then I would have the next list and the next list. But Todoist allows me to create a multidimensional experience of everything that's important, less important, things that have to be done today, next week, or that are recurring events as well. I find that the more I use it, the more ways I find to use it. I'm really blown away. It plays a huge role in simplifying my life and making sure that nothing falls between the cracks.
I'm glad to hear it. I can say the same. I wasn't a Todoist user before I started working at Duist, but obviously it's the platform that we use to run all our projects on, and I started using it, and now everybody around me uses it as well. It can be a game changer. It's like a second brain where you can drop everything in there. The date parsing is something that people really love. If you want to get real nerdy on this, that's what people really enjoy, is that you can literally drop anything in there, any verbiage, like feed the dog every other morning at 2 a.m. and that will populate on your to-do list every other morning at 2 a.m. And if you want it to sync with your calendar, it'll sync with your calendar both ways. So if you add something to your calendar, it'll add it to your Todoist or vice versa. And then there's all kinds of things like voice notes and location reminders. I put stuff in there. I have stuff that's going to pop up when I'm back in the U.S. next week. That's when I go by places that I added a year ago. Next time you're in this area, make sure you stop by this place and buy this, or say hey to this person or whatever. And when I get there, it will pop up. It really has been a game changer for me as well. It's allowed me to clear the mind and focus on the things that really matter.
It's a power assistant that knows everything that you should know, and you don't even have to think about it. That's how I see it.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Let's go back to travel. You talk a lot about slow travel, which is a new concept to a lot of people. I know that at the beginning, a lot of us want to see as many things as possible and travel quickly, but eventually we all slow down. What has the experience been like for you? Why slow travel?
One of the things that always attracted me to traveling was really immersing in the culture. When I mentioned I did the typical European backpacker thing in college, and I hit all the major cities and took pictures in front of the major attractions, and I liked that, but that got out of my system really quick. I didn't love that. I loved sitting at a pub in some town in Ireland and striking up a conversation with a local and being there long enough to where the shop owner knew me, and I could just walk in and say hi and make some real connections. That was always something that I learned really early on. I also realized, as much as I like the travel planning and everything, just being on the go all the time is just more work than it is fun. I'm constantly figuring out the logistics of the next place, and that's exasperated when you throw in visas and changing countries, and exasperated even further when you start doing it with a partner, and even further when you start dragging an animal around with you or a child with you. All these factors just suck the joy out of the experience. I personally don't want to move any more often than 3 months. My slowest pace is 1 month, and really, it really is 3 months. 1 month isn't really an option. It's just a last resort if needed. But generally, I want to be somewhere for at least 3 months, and ideally 6, 9, 12 months, and really just dive in on that area, learn the language, meet the people, get to know the different neighborhoods. I want to be in a place long enough to where I get bored of it and where I'm itching to go to the next place, not the opposite of that, where you're going, oh, I'm just getting settled in here. I like it a lot. There's more to see and more to do, but I got to start planning the next trip. And for me, that doesn't equate.
I love it. I can relate to that. I'm thinking of life's biggest regrets. Nobody ever says, I wish I worked harder. I wish I was richer. People often say, I wish I traveled more. What advice would you have for them? For all of us?
If you're called to this lifestyle at all, it's not for everyone, right? It's fine if travel isn't your thing. If exploring and seeing new places just doesn't flip your trigger, then don't make that sacrifice. But if it is there at all, and I find so many people who do have that, but they say, I'm going to do that later in life, or, oh, I wish I could do that, or I'm so jealous, you're so lucky, you get to do this, I want to live that lifestyle, then you owe it to yourself to try. And now more than ever, this ability to continue to earn income while traveling, which was normally the hindrance, which this was normally the thing, the reason that people wouldn't be able to do this, Or perhaps you had assets like your home and your mortgage, which you just, what are you going to do with that? Now you have things like Airbnb and about 10 other platforms that cater to subletting your place or renting your place while you go travel, or even doing home exchanges or house swaps. There are so many reasons to say no, but you don't need to pay attention to those. I got some really good advice from, I've mentioned her a lot in this episode, but I guess she's been very inspirational to me in the sense of our life. My wife, when I was making the hard decision to leave my comfortable career behind and to possibly go down to Chile and possibly teach English, I had none of it figured out. I was offered a really good deal to stay. I had a nice promotion out there. Wait one more year and you'll be here, and all these things. And I was convinced. I was not wanting to stay, but I was convinced by those things. And I went home and told my wife, trying to convince her. And she told me very wisely, she said, those things will always be there. There will always be that next step, that reason not to go. Her words to me, this is what you want to do, and you're going to have to do it at some point in your life anyway. So there's no better time than now. And just cut the cord and do it. And worst case scenario, you'll end up back here in the same place in a year, 2 years, or whatever. And that was 100% true. All those opportunities, maybe not identical, but pretty much the same opportunities were there a year or two later when I started fishing around thinking about how I was going to return. So my advice to that person is set the excuses aside. There will always be a reason not to go. And if you feel called, you owe it to yourself to just go.
Travel is a lot like investing. When people ask me if this is a good time to start, I always say the best time is now. And it's something that you do all your life, not just in a good year or a bad year. It's part of your life, and travel is the same. Don't save it until later. Do a little bit now and then, as soon as you can.
This is it, connecting it to travel, the slow travel and investing. I read The Automatic Millionaire when I was like a teenager. My uncle got it for me. I'll never forget. He's had done well in life and got me this book for Christmas, which 14-year-old wants to read The Automatic Millionaire, probably you. It just planted that seed about like doing all the automatic things, making your financial future kind of automatic and just setting things aside. And I think it's kind of, so I did that. I've always done that. I was busing tables at that time and I started putting 10% away. And it's the same with slow travel. It's, I need to be in a place, it's slow and steady. That's what wins the race. I'm just going to continue to do this because I owe it to myself. And I don't want to get to the end and wish that I had saved more or experienced more.
You know that I love what I do. And for many years, I wondered, can I continue to do what I do, work in the investment profession while being free from the desk? And I feel very blessed that this became a possibility. So I don't have to choose one or the other. I can pursue both. And I think it's remarkable that we get to live this way. And it's more available than ever before. I think it's a blessing.
Absolutely. You're an inspiration to many, I think, because you've taken a very traditional role and you've challenged that conventional wisdom and probably inspired more people than you know to second guess whether or not they have to follow that path they may not be called to. That's why your story is so interesting as well.
Thank you. That's very kind of you to say. I want to ask you about a podcast recommendation. I can already guess what you're going to say, but tell us which one and why are you having so much fun with it?
There's this great podcast by this wonderful host called About Abroad. No, in truth, if anything that I've discussed here today about my life is interesting to you listening, then I would check out my podcast because I'm talking to people who are living 10 times more interesting lives and have jumped through many hoops to make this lifestyle work. And they're doing it in very exotic parts of the world and doing it with families and doing it with challenges presented to them that I haven't had. I find it really entertaining to learn from these people and really inspirational, and hope you will as well. On another note, I think is in this a similar space, I have a friend, Mitko Karshovsky, who hosts That Remote Life, which is another podcast. And they dive more into entrepreneurship in particular and how to run like remote businesses. While mine is more focused on the personal side, both are covering practical tips and ways you can make this lifestyle work. But I would highly recommend Mitko's podcast as well.
Terrific. I love it. Thank you so much for your time, Chase. This was really fun. I learn a lot and I always enjoy catching up and hearing what you're up to. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. It was great to see you again. Great to be invited, and thank you for the opportunity. Good to see you.
Good to see you, my friend. You were listening to Talking Billions. We talk about big ideas, big inspirations, big topics. We take on the hardest subject of all, money. But our conversations lead us to an even bigger question: what it means to live a rich life beyond money. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment and follow, subscribe, rate, and share with friends and family. We rely on word of mouth to promote the show. One click for you means the world to us. Thank you. Until next time, your host, Bogumil Baranowski. The content of this podcast is for general informational purposes only, and so are the opinions of members of Seacard Associates, a registered investment advisor, and guests of the show. This podcast does not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any specific security or financial instruments, or provide investment advice or service. Past performance is not indicative of future results. More information on Seacard Associates is available in its Form ADV disclosure documents, available at advisorinfo.sec.gov.